Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com. Dave runs the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, the big news today, and it's worth leading with because we've certainly given it its due, but this guy is a Steeler legend, certainly will go down as probably one of the all-time Steelers. It sounds like Hines Ward, the reality of age, declining skills, and apparently no interest from any other team has hit home, and in about an hour from now, he's going to announce his retirement over at the Steelers facility on the south side.
Yeah, make sure you have your terrible towels, because you know how emotional Hines can be. He wears his emotions on his sleeve and all, and yeah, you know, what are we? Not even almost a full week into free, or actually, I guess we are a full week into free agency now. Tuesday, and no interest in Hines Ward whatsoever. I think he recently just took some time off. I think I heard that he took a little vacation. Of course, his house showed up for sale. His Atlanta home showed up for sale on the internet and all. So, I'm guessing this is it. And no real surprise that he didn't get any attention during the opening of free agency.
Well, let's just say there's no real surprise from this end. I don't know that, we had Dan Kovacevic and various other guys saying he'd definitely get a contract places. I think the Pittsburgh media really thought he would get a contract.
I think they were split. I mean, I wasn't ruling out the possibility of it. You know, I wasn't slam dunk. Of course, I didn't think by this time he would have one. Definitely not. But, when you get later on into free agency, once the big names come off, then that's when you see the fringe names, the guys that are the third to fourth wide receivers. And evidently he's gotten the message already, or he probably put a feelers out to a few other teams that he thought maybe he could play for, and they probably said, thanks, but no thanks. So I think it's a reality. Like I said, it's going to be a very emotional press conference. I have a feeling today, and if you miss it, I'll have it up on SteelersDepot.com. But Steelers.com will be carrying it live, as will several other radio stations, and I'm sure local TV as well.
Yeah, so, we've talked about him at length and his Hall of Fame candidacy and some of the other things. I think at the end of the day, this will please Steeler fans. I think a lot of people, they don't want to see the guys they remember play their last year or two as a non-important figure in another team's uniform. And obviously the most often cited is Franco Harris playing for the Seahawks in his last days. And nobody wants the Steelers having to play against Hines Ward. Even though his declining skills, we know what a ferocious blocker he is and a competitor he is. And, he'd be out there looking for blood if he were on the other side, just like he does every Sunday. So I think there'll be a lot of good feelings today, over today and tomorrow as the tributes and accolades roll in and Hines gets his just due. At the end of the day, none of this is really going to matter. I think it's a little unfortunate. Maybe this couldn't all be wrapped up in one big bow a month ago.
And I'm sure the Steelers would have gladly done that for him. The Steelers have taken a lot of crap for the way this went down. But, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, they're not going to hold a press conference for a guy that they're releasing that thinks he can play another season or two to go to another team. It's just not the way they work. So.
Yeah, and Hines made it very clear he wanted to continue his career. So yeah, I don't think Hines has hard feelings about that. And so it was Hines' decision, and Hines didn't see the handwriting on the wall, and I think maybe now he does.
Yeah, what I'm saying is a lot of the fan base really gave the Steelers organization some crap on this, and I think that was wrong to do. I'm with you. I mean, I'm with the part of the fan base that says I didn't want him to play for another team. You know, you hate to see those guys in that way. But, I mean, to knock the Steelers organization to do for doing what they thought was right with him moving forward, you can't knock them for that.
Yep, I'm with you. We've been on the same page on that one. Dave, as we wrap up some of these things, these stories that have been driving, let's get this Peyton Manning thing off the table here. Let's discuss that and then the ramifications for Mike Wallace, because since we spoke on Friday, a lot actually has gone down in terms of some signings that really took teams off the table. But now with Peyton Manning having made his decision and Alex Smith being out there and maybe affecting what San Francisco does, you know, maybe the window still is slightly ajar for Mike Wallace to leave. So, first of all, Peyton Manning to Denver. It was clear they were down to three teams. I think the consensus is the 49ers provided the best opportunity, but Peyton was most comfortable and in his heart wanted to go to Denver, wanted to stay in the AFC. The Titans were a logical fit because of his college days in Tennessee. But I guess everybody's a little surprised he went to Denver because they weren't even a team at the very beginning who was in the conversation. But here we are, and what's your take?
It kind of looked like the arrow was really pointing to San Francisco there.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, I threw out a tweet with a question mark attached to it stating, is San Francisco really the leader in the clubhouse right now? And several people thought they were, and a few people didn't think they were. And, you know, then you had the Titans out there with supposedly that lifetime contract stipulation out there, which, you know, I assume meant part ownership down the road as well, too. And, of course, Peyton being from Tennessee. So, but I think Elway fought the hardest for him. I think when you look at the final situation, with the 49ers in Denver, I think would have been the best places for him to go. I think Denver has the better offensive line for him to be behind. I'm not very impressed with a wide receiving corps. We're going to get into the back end of that here in a moment here. But, I can't fault Denver for doing it. I tell you what though, it was the only parachute that John Elway had in getting rid of Tim Tebow, and makes it easier on the fan base for them to do this, bring Peyton in, and then ship Tebow off now, and Elway still saves some face here. But in the end, I'm not totally surprised, but it wasn't the first team that I saw him going to.
Yep, and it's just been filed by Adam Schefter that they have reached an agreement on a 5-year, $96 million contract. So that's average annual value of roughly $19 million a year. We don't know how much of that is guaranteed up front in terms of a signing bonus. But, you know, we've talked about Denver now and the ramifications of this thing. Obviously, in the national media, the big story is Tim Tebow is now on the block, and where does he go and what is his value? We've seen guys, you know, initially guys were, I think, a little bit on the crack pipe talking about a second and a fifth or the first and blah, blah, blah. I've said all along I thought a third would get it done. Mike Mayock of the NFL Network has said a fifth rounder would probably get it done. And the candidates are exactly who you might think. It's where you're going to put fans in the seats. Jacksonville, is certainly the leader in the clubhouse, even though they signed Chad Henne. Miami is the other team that's being talked about, but yesterday they signed David Garrard. And as you said, you know, is that the consolation prize or the booby prize, or what do you get for that? And a couple other teams have been mentioned, New England, Green Bay. The Steelers are not going to be in this conversation. But, where does Tim Tebow go?
I think Jacksonville is the real possibility, and there's not too many teams out there I wouldn't imagine. Let me throw this back on you. If you're the new owner down there and knowing, you know, definitely knowing what Tebow is and what Tebow isn't, is this a deal that you make because you think Tebow can win? Is this a deal that you make because you think it's going to give Blaine Gabbert a couple of years to season a little bit more, and in the meantime, you're going to pack out the stadium? Or is it both? Do you think Tebow can win and put the butts in the seat?
I'll tell you what, it's a deal I make in 2 seconds because I'm going to sell 10 to 15,000 season tickets at, you know, let's just call it, you know, I don't know what the number is, $200 a season ticket, and all of a sudden, you know, those numbers are real money. That's real money that pays for Tebow's contract. It pays for other things. It creates some buzz and excitement for the team. His contract is not that onerous. I think he's only due $1.6 million or something this year. I think he only has 2 years left after this year. So, listen, I do this from a business standpoint. It makes absolute sense because I'm a businessman. I own a football team. I'm happy to give Tebow some burn this year and see how it goes. But I have to think that at the end of the day, I may make this trade and then look to move Blaine Gabbert for a first or second, you know, a second round pick if I could to the Browns. And, you also have to have your coaching staff a little bit on board here. But if I'm the owner, I'm going to bring this down and I'm going to give the Tim Tebow thing a year or two experiment just because it's my franchise and I'm going to do it. Now, at the end of the day, I'll just say I'm more in the Merrill Hodge camp than in the, you know, in the other camp. I don't think Tim Tebow's incompetent, but I don't think Tim Tebow will ever be a really good NFL quarterback. So I do think it'll set – not that that franchise isn't going to be set back as it is. They're in pretty dire straits in terms of the personnel they have. So that's part of the reason I would do it. If I had a franchise that was knocking on the door, I wouldn't be bringing in Tim Tebow. But Jacksonville, I don't think they're going anywhere for the next year or two. I'd make that move. But as you said, I don't see many other teams unless, you know, New England convinces the kid that he's going to play H-back and he's going to get five snaps a game at quarterback, that might be interested.
And I think fourth or fifth round is going to, you know, when a team knows you're trying to get out from it, I think other teams will wait it out. And this could be a type deal that happens as late as, like, draft day, probably something like that, where they get Tim Tebow from the Broncos for, say, a fourth or a fifth. But I wouldn't give up any more than that just to put the butts in the seats, I don't think. So, and I don't expect this to happen right away.
Okay, well, let me ask you then the obvious question is, what if nobody wants Tim Tebow for a draft choice? Is Denver better off releasing him or keeping him around?
The kid's not going to be a cancer, so, I'd keep him around. You can put some things into that offense, three or four plays maybe a game at most where you use him, especially maybe in some short yardage situations and all like that. So if he's under contract and you can afford to have him on the roster, which I think it's obvious that they'll be able to do, then I wouldn't just flat out give him his release. I would keep him. And, Manny's good. Let's look at Manny. He's coming off of some serious neck issues here. You never know when he might go down after two or three games.
Sounds to me like there is rumbling that if they don't trade him, that they would release him to give him the opportunity to go play where he wants to play, as a service to him as much as anything. I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying, but if Peyton, the injury factor can happen to any quarterback at any time, and maybe Peyton Manning's a tad more susceptible than most. But signing a 5-year contract, I mean, I don't know, Tim Tebow. You know, there are obviously two sides of the coin. Sitting, going to practice every day and learning from Peyton Manning will do you a great service in your development. But there's also the fact that, you know, apparently Peyton Manning takes every snap in practice. Curtis Painter, you know, never took a snap. The guy who was behind him, Sorgi, those guys never took snaps in practice. So I don't know how much that does for your development in terms of your physical skills. Certainly the other problem is they're going to – you know, Ike Taylor was just on ESPN on SportsCenter. I'm not sure Ike did himself a great service by being on there, but he talked about how you had to keep Tebow in Denver because he knows the offense. Well, hey, Ike, they're not going to be running that offense in Denver. They're going to be running Peyton Manning's offense, and Tim Tebow doesn't know that offense. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And you know what? To tag on to that, David, Elway wants out from underneath the Tebow, period. He don't want the pressure. And let's look at, let's say Manning gets off to a cold start, gets injured right off the bat. Tebow comes in, wins two or three two or three ball games the way he has done in the past. What do you think the pressure from the fan base would be at that point? You know, I could definitely see Elway just wanting to pull the ripcord completely on this and at least not even have the fan base or anybody else tempting him to go back to Tebow.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think he would prefer to see him outside the organization. That's why I think it's a real shot that they do release him. The obvious question then for Steeler fans is the Mike Wallace situation. Everybody knows where I stand on this. I said there's no chance he's getting an offer sheet. And I certainly thought with the moves the New England Patriots made, they've signed Anthony Gonzalez, they've signed Donta Stallworth, they've made moves to fill their wide receiver hole. Basically, they're going to have tryouts in training camp and in OTAs, and they'll keep the guys who do the best job. So they're kind of set at wide receiver. The other team was the 49ers. They went out and signed Mario Manningham and looked like they were pretty much set. Now, Peter King said one thing, and I'll give this a little bit of credence. He said if Alex Smith leaves and goes to Miami, that frees up about $8 million of cap space. And would they go out and want to look at Mike Wallace, go with Kaepernick as their starter, and maybe Josh Johnson as the backup who's available in free agency, who Jim Harbaugh coached at San Diego State? And I'll say that's all fine and good, but $8 million is not going to get it done to get Mike Wallace away from the Steelers. If it's $8 million, the Steelers will match that. I'm pretty comfortable with that if it's a four-year, $8 million deal. And I'm not sure Ike Taylor signs that contract. The second team, again, is now Denver is in the equation. Peyton Manning with the contract we just talked about, they were about $40 million of cap space. Let's say Peyton took 15 of that away this year, 15 to 18 of that. Let's say they have low 20s. If they're looking at bringing in guys like Jeff Saturday, guys like Dallas Clark, and then filling some of their holes on defense, got to remember both their defensive ends are free agents. They've got some issues at safety. They need some more help at linebacker. I'm not sure that I see in their first year them looking to pay Mike Wallace $10 million and taking up that much more of the cap space. It's an interesting idea. Certainly they have the money. I imagine they probably have batted it around. I just think they have too many needs. I'm still putting it at no chance Mike Wallace signs an offer sheet with another team.
I don't think it happens still, but if any team now left in this race could make it happen, I think they could, regardless of the Jeff Saturday, regardless of Dallas Clark likely. It looks like they might be heading in that direction on both those guys. Those guys' first-year cap hits on whatever contract that they give them, David, and when you take in displacement into account on the top 51, that's not going to take up much cap room. Now, they do have they need a backup running back to Willis McGahee still. It's unknown whether or not they're going to address that in free agency or try to address that in the draft. You mentioned
– Yeah, that's an excellent point. Willis McGahee is a guy who's been banged up. He's done some productive stuff. He's a guy who has been, has been productive at times. But, if you're talking about who you're going to worry about losing, Peyton Manning or Willis McGahee, the way Peyton gets rid of the ball and the way Willis McGahee gets hit in his injury history, they really do need a backup for him.
Yeah, but once again, though, looking at what's out there on the free agent market and what it's costing to sign these guys. I mean, look at Mike Tolbert, who signed with the Panthers. That first-year cap hit is very, very minuscule. $700,000 base salary to go along with $2 million signing bonus equates to roughly 1.2-something million first-year cap hit. And these other running backs are left on this market. You can expect a first-year cap hit of the same. So what I'm trying to say is they are going to have the cap room if they decide they want to go after Mike Wallace. The bigger question still, around the whole thing, though, that everybody seems to keep ignoring is it's going to cost them a first-round draft pick. And, a lot of the fans throw these first-round draft picks around like they're trading them with their buddy at the fantasy football league draft or whatnot, and people hold these things, teams hold draft picks pretty much in high regard still. So that's the deal breaker. Now, of course, if Mike Wallace had been unrestricted through this whole thing, Mike Wallace would be long signed away, but the restricted first-round tender is the biggest deterrent here. And when you look at the Steelers and their cap situation and the availability to free up a couple more million in case of emergency here with a couple other cuts, I'm with you. I still don't think he gets an offer sheet here.
Yep. And so we go there again. And people, I think the other thing is, back-end picks were less costly than picks high in the draft, but the new structure really does make it more advantageous to keep draft picks. You get a better chance to keep your cap situation under control. I just think the Broncos have enough holes that first things first, I just don't see them with, having Thomas and Decker and some of the young tight ends they have, and then maybe getting a guy like Dallas Clark at a relatively cheap number. I just don't think they'll throw another 10 at the wide receiver position. But again,
I think I heard Brandon Stokley's name thrown in back into this too.
I did too, and I gotta assume that's a fringe thing. He lives in Denver, so I don't know if that was. I read that same piece, and I couldn't really tell if they were talking about him being around or him actually being around on the field.
I thought I read that there might be some interest in signing him, but and that kind of caught me by surprise there. I mean, let's face it, though, David, their receiving crew does not put the fear of God of anybody. Now, the young kid that beat us in the AFC wildcard game, Thomas.
Thomas, right.
That guy is talented for sure. But, is it enough to but on the flip side, look at what Manning did with Garcon and
Collie.
And over there in Indianapolis.
Yeah, Gonzalez. I mean, when Marvin Harrison retired, he had Wayne, but then it was Carson, Gollie, and Anthony Gonzalez when he could be on the field. And Dallas Clark was hurt a lot of the time. He had to throw to that tight end that they had filling in who turned to be a revelation. But I think it was more Peyton Manning can get it done with anybody.
Yeah, and Peyton's not one in this point of his career specifically that's going to be looking to beat you with the deep ball downfield. Peyton just reads the defense, takes what you give him, and gets the ball out quick, as you noted earlier. I mean, Peyton's not in that pocket for a long period of time on 3- and 5-step drops and all. So, maybe although Mike Walsh could definitely stretch the field for him and take take some DBs with him out of the play and all, but is that really that it's a mighty expensive decoy if that's if you're only going to throw to him deep so many times, and Mike Wallace is yet to really set the world on fire up underneath coverages and all in the 10 to 15 yard range. So I don't know. I mean, I still don't think this happens, but I think they do have the room to make it happen. I just don't. I think they're just going to go with what they have and probably draft a speedster there maybe in the first or second round at wide receiver, because let's remember, this is just not a one-year contract for Peyton.
Yep. So, we seem to get 10 minutes of Mike Wallace in every day, so we got in our Mike Wallace quota. Just to lay out the details for everybody, the draft is April 27th. The offer sheet signing period ends April 20th because there are 7 days for the NFL team who controls his rights to match. So we won't have this for more than one more month, and that'll be good for everybody. Dave, running back has been something that's been talked about a lot. You and I had a little banter last night on Twitter. It seems to me like Ed Bousset decided to recycle a story that came out when Kevin Colbert talked at the Combine about Rashard Mendenhall. And used a lot of Colbert quotes that seemed to me to be quotes from that press conference basically a month ago, saying, the Steelers aren't counting on Rashard Mendenhall. It takes about a year sometimes to return from an ACL injury. And Ed goes on to say he may have had his last carry as a Steeler, and this may be it. So you wrote about this today. You and I tweeted about it last night, going back and forth a bit. Why don't you take first crack?
That's Dr. Dave.
Yeah, Dr. Dave, exactly.
to catch people out that don't follow on Twitter, I posted, I think, first something to the effect that why is everybody so surprised that this is not, this is not new news here, and that indeed he could be out. And David fired back about Baron Batch and his 7-month, 8-month recovery there and being, back back, assumingly 100%. And I fired back to David, it ain't happening. David fired back to me that, okay, thank you, Dr. Dave. So that brings you up on there. And we did kind of go back. I'm glad you brought that up today. I did write about this. Ed Bouchette did recycle this. In fact, the headline, I mean, the title of the post that I wrote is rehashing Rashard Mendenhall news that really isn't new news. And because it's not. And I'm not sure what prompted Ed to kind of recycle this. I don't fault him too terribly much for it. I do fault guys like Jameson Hensley, who I took a shot at in my post, who I've tried to give this guy a break after break, year after year. He's a former Baltimore Ravens beat writer, and I do not hold that against him in my assessment of him. I just think this guy offers nothing new. And he does not pay close enough attention to all four teams in the AFC North, probably the Ravens more than anybody because he covered them. But I think he really did tagging on to that story a disservice. But basically, I mean, here we're in the same position, David, that we were in when Rashard Mendenhall tore that ACL. He did not have surgery until mid-January, okay? For a running back, and Kevin Colbert has said all along that we're not counting on him being 100% at all for the season, and there is a distinct possibility that he might not play. I think that's a little extreme, but, you know, you seem to think that he might have a chance to open the season, I guess, the regular season. I don't. I think this guy is headed 100% for PUP at the start of the year. And if that indeed is the case, David, then that's 6 weeks you can guarantee he's not going to be in there. Now, how far past that point, because after 6 weeks, that three-week window opens up where he can begin practicing. It does not have to be day one after 6 weeks. It could be the last day of that three-week window when he starts practicing. And at that point, from the day he starts practicing, another three-week window opens up that the Steelers have to make the decision to place him back on the 53-man roster, release him, or place him on IR. So, you know, the angle I attack this in the past with him since that injury has happened is a realistic time frame for this injury is 9 months, okay? And that, even in my opinion, is not Rashard back 100%. If he's going to miss the first 6 weeks, and let's say, you know, I even think at that point the Steelers would be stupid to rush him back right after his stay on the PUP list ends, because you're going to risk taking a guy and put him back on the field, him tear that thing up again, then you throw him, all that time's wasted, you're already eating the salary for the year, salary cap wise, you have to throw him away on IR, and then he's walking after the year free agency anyway. So my viewpoint is, and the thing that I suggested here, is if he's going to be out first 9 or 10 weeks of the season, why wouldn't you release him now?
Well, because I don't think the Steelers think he's going to be out the first 9 or 10 weeks of the season. They obviously have to prepare with that as a possibility, because it would be negligent to not do that. But we've seen repeatedly guys come back. And Willis McGahee, a guy we talked about earlier, is another guy. I mean, we talk about this stuff, and guys make up timelines to fit their story rather than making up, you know, looking at timelines historically at how quickly guys come back from injury. Now, look, do I think he's going to be the starting back on opening day? Probably not. But for people to then, you know, take Colbert's conservative statements and say Rashard's not going to have a carry this year and his days as a Steeler are done, goes right back to your point. Why wouldn't they have made moves to, cap moves to do that? It's because that's not what they actually believe. The reality is there's a decent chance he's going to be back and carrying the ball at some point this season for the Steelers and probably be the feature back. If it's 9 months versus 11 months, is that different? Sure, of course it's different. But we've seen, you know, these guys, people
but see,
also...
But they're not going to cut him yet. I mean, they don't have to cut him yet.
No, of course they don't.
They don't need that extra $2 million that they would save right this very minute. Now, and
I just don't think they're going to cut him. You asked the question, and I said, you said, why wouldn't they cut him? I said, I don't think they're going to cut him because I don't think that's what they believe is actually going to happen. We got to remember, these are the best conditioned athletes in the world, getting the best doctors in the world, and their livelihood is based on getting this injury rehabbed and coming back in full strength. And I have no reason to believe Rashard Mendenhall is not going to try to do that to the best of his ability. And he knows he's a free agent after this year, and getting on the field this year and showing teams that he's able to perform will have a monstrous impact on the kind of deal he can get in free agency the following year. So I think the whole thing is a narrative. Somebody wants to write a story, and then it gets picked up nationally by everybody. Recycled news. Nothing's new from what we knew before, unless somebody's been talking to Rashard's doctor, and I didn't see any quotes like that. So I just think this is a kind of mental masturbation exercise that is a waste of everybody's time, from what Kevin Colbert said at the combine. And, let's see where he is in July when they're doing OTAs and a month before they're about to open camp, and if he's jogging and, what his status is.
Well, I mean, would you agree, though, that a nine-month return time after the surgery would probably be the earliest that he would be able to get on the field? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, I think September, yeah, sure.
Nine months would put it at the middle of October since he had a surgery.
Yeah, I mean, I can't count days for you exactly. No, I mean, the answer is not every guy is more than 9 months or every guy is less than 9 months. There's a spectrum of people there. So, the middle of October, if he's full speed at 9 months, he does his 6 weeks on the PUP and he's ready to go right when that's done. So,
yeah, I think that's best case scenario. I mean, I really do. And if they think that there's
Tell me why Baron Batch was able to be full speed in 6 months.
He's not playing football yet either, David.
Well, okay, but he's running at full speed, cutting, doing
sure,
everything.
Sure, but that's. I mean, I'm not arguing with that. He is back doing some of the things, but he's not on the football field yet.
Okay, well, so that means Rashard's going to be running and cutting and doing full speed stuff basically in July. And if he's doing that, then we'll see where he goes from there. I don't know why the media and anybody is in such a hurry to make decisions about what's going to happen in September when we're sitting here in March with no more information than we had on January 15th.
And that's where we roll back here. This is not new news. I mean, we're in the same, like, as you said, unless Bouchette has been told something different that he's not releasing just yet, there was really wasn't any reason to bring that back up other than the fact I kind of see he was tagging on to the Mike Tolbert stuff and all like that, I think. But and it made his pay, that stuff was released on their pay side of the Post Gazette. Maybe it was something just to feel like those guys were getting some inside info over there, I guess. I don't know. But there was actually no reason to recycle this story, and that's why I kind of attacked it the way that I did. But I am not ready to rule out, as I point in my story, that releasing Rashard Mendenhall is a possibility if they think this thing's going to go past week nine.
Sure, anything's a possibility. He gets hit by a car, it's going to make it less interesting. So if the medical news comes in at some point in the future that he, has a setback or for whatever reason he's not going to be able to play this year, that will alter the Steeler plans in terms of about how they go about things.
And also, too, that I mentioned in my article, and I'm probably about 90% sure on this, on the injury benefit classification, that if they were to cut him, although he'd qualify for a $1 million benefit, there's no grievance involved there to my knowledge, because that would happen, had to happen, him being released in the same calendar year that the injury happened in. So if indeed that is the case and they don't take that $1 million against the cap, or any grievances involved, I'm kind of saying that, yeah, I could see that playing into the decision of him being released. Now, of course, if I am wrong in this and he is able to file a grievance, or if any of this injury benefit does count against the cap, then it makes absolutely no sense to cut him then, because you're not saving anything. Then you might as well ride him as long as you need to ride him on PUP, and if, God forbid, he's not ready after week 13, then you just throw him on the IR.
And while Dave, while we're in the prediction business, and I, you know, as I've said all along, Wallace isn't getting an offer sheet. He's going to play. They wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal. And before free agency, I don't think they'll sign him to a long-term deal before the draft. I'm not sure they sign him to a long-term deal at any point this season. I think $2.7 million is comfortable for the Steelers and comfortable for Wallace. So that's, I've been on record that I've said Hines Ward is not going to get a contract offer. I'd say we cut him, and he wouldn't get a contract offer from other teams. I'll go out and say Rashard Mendenhall plays at least 8 games for the Steelers this year and gets at least, I'll say, 100 carries for the Steelers this year.
I think that would I'd take the I would take the under on both.
And do you think he gets a carry for the Steelers this year?
Wow. I mean, no.
So you think he's never going to dress as a Steeler again?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I can really see situations where they end up cutting him, David. So, it all depends on if they cut him or not. If they don't cut him, then of course he stands a chance to get a carry at some point during the season. So for me to go out and say he's not going to get a carry, I can't do that because it's all right.
But so what you're saying is you think he's going to be an insignificant part of the Steeler, insignificant contributor to the Steeler season this coming year.
That is correct, sir. And it can.
All right, who's ever taking notes on this stuff, note that, please.
Alan Gifford, I know you're listening. write all this stuff down so we don't have to go back and listen to the tape because David likes to put words in my mouth. I'm still trying to recover from Deuce Staley taking a deuce.
All right. Now, the other stuff that's going on in the light of this running back stuff is, you know, conversations about Mike Tolbert, who I guess it was misreported that the Steelers had some interest. He never made a visit to the Steelers. In fact, he visited Carolina. He went to Coastal Carolina and signed with them. They had a guy there who I guess has dealt with him in years past. And it's interesting because obviously when you sign a guy like that and you have James Stewart and you have D'Angelo Williams on your roster, Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams on your roster, you say, are you going to have enough touches for all three guys? Now, in their press release, Carolina referred to Tolbert as a fullback and means he might be used in a slightly different role. And they have come out and said basically nobody's on the trading block. And, in fact, NFL insiders, meaning front office guys, have said they've made calls, and apparently Stewart is not on the trading block. But that doesn't keep people from speculating that Stewart is on the trading block. So what are your thoughts on that signing and, you know, how that fits into the Steelers picture?
First of all, the initial report by Kevin Acey, the San Diego beat writer out there, naming the Panthers and the Steelers as the places where he would end up, that was total speculation on his part. Jerry Dulac quickly shot that down, that there was no meeting scheduled with the Steelers, no interest from the Steelers side. I believe that, especially early on in free agency. It's not to mean that maybe another month and a half from now, after you get past the draft and all, if Tolbert still remained unsigned, that the Steelers might not have interest in him. So not surprising there, not surprising that Carolina with Ron Rivera, used to be a defensive coach over there at San Diego. So the fit was there. He took a lot less money than he probably thought he was going to get before free agency opened up there. They do have a logjam at running back now. When you tag on Mike Goodson onto the other three there, D'Angelo Williams is their man. That's their bell cow. You throw Tolbert into the mix, who is a all-around fullback, running back, third down back, special teams guy, can pick up the blitz. He's kind of a jack-of-all-trades type of back. It leads you to believe it, and if I'm the Panthers, I give every appearance that Jonathan Stewart is not on the open market. And Kian Fahey, guy who just started writing for me recently, brought up, was really the first one to kind of attack this angle since Tolbert had signed, actually before Tolbert had officially signed, saying that, Jonathan Stewart would be an intriguing fit for the Steelers. Kind of would fit the MO of what they need, especially if you know, if in fact that Mendenhall was to miss the entire year. Now, he goes as far as say that, of course, you would have to trade for him. And, you know, trying to predict trades in the NFL is, I mean, A, to go out and speculate on it really takes balls in the first place. B, a lot of times a lot of this stuff just does not happen. But it is a interesting angle. Now, my opinion, will it happen? I even tagged on to his posting on Twitter. I don't think that happens. Now, if Jonathan Stewart was to be cut loose, that's a different story. But I don't think they trade a third or a fourth round pick for him to get him. And it would not surprise me come draft day if Jonathan Stewart is traded somewhere.
I agree with the last statement. I don't think there's any chance they cut him because he has value, and I think somebody will give you something for him. So, you know, again, it comes back a little bit into the conversation of what you think of Mendenhall, and we'll see how the Steelers react. We'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see what they do through the rest of free agency if they feel like they're short there. There's obviously limited money to spend. Not no money, but limited money. They've got to get Byron Leftwich signed. They probably will sign Charlie Batch as well. Although you never know, maybe they think Gerard Johnson or Troy Smith can be that third quarterback at slightly less dollars. The guy who now looks like he may not be back is a restricted free agent, William Gay. Is Gay unrestricted or restricted?
Oh, no, he's unrestricted.
Unrestricted free agent William Gay, right. And I think somebody miswrote that this morning. But Gay hasn't visited Arizona yesterday. Obviously, the Steeler connection's there. And then he is visiting Tennessee either today or tomorrow. You know, I think we've said all along, with the emergence of Keenan Lewis and the two young guys, William Gay is a nice guy to have around, but he's a guy who the Steelers probably aren't going to pay, you know, more than kind of $1.5 million, tops $2 million a year, if that. So thoughts on where Gay's going
to
end up?
Hey, he said he had a good, a productive visit to Arizona. Of course, why would any free agent have a negative tone to their voice whatsoever? I think the obvious thing is he did not sign a contract. He's visiting the Titans today, who, of course, they lost Cortland Finnegan to the Rams early in free agency here. So not that Gay would come in and be a starter there, but he would provide depth. And look, maybe he got an offer from the Cardinals, okay? So maybe he's got one sticking in his back pocket right now that has a deadline on. This guy wants to return to the Steelers. I mean, there is no doubt in my mind, and I believe every time he said it, that he wants to return to the Steelers. The Steelers would like to have him back, but it's not going to be any more than a qualifying contract, David, where they could get the discount for, you know, against the salary cap, a one-year deal qualifying offer. So, and they're not going to sign him until after the draft. They're just not going to sign him until that happens. So if he gets a better offer, and also, Gay, you can't fault Gay for not banking on the if come either. If this guy gets a 1 or 2 year deal with Tennessee or Arizona with a little bit better, you know, signing bonus than what a qualifying contract at most, I believe, can allow, a $65,000 signing bonus. So, you know, if he can get more guaranteed money than that, then certainly he's going to be gone.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I expect him to be gone. Where are you on that?
He's getting some visits this morning, what he had last year. So, yeah, I like his chances to be gone right now more than I do him staying, being that he's already making some visits.
And, Dave, just to kind of wrap things up here, the Steelers made a couple, you know, minor signings, Wes Lyons returning and another kid from West Virginia that you've written about.
Yeah, this kid from West Virginia, he's, you know, he didn't get drafted, and he went undrafted last year. He did not get signed, evidently, to anybody's preseason roster or anything like that. His name is Will Johnson. He measures in at 6'2". He's grown kind of into his frame at 242 pounds. He's a guy that supposedly impressed enough last year at the West Virginia Pro Day, but like I said, just lost contact with teams because of the short offseason after the lockout ended and all like that. He really evidently impressed Tomlin And Kevin Colbert kind of working alongside this year's crop at the Pro Day at West Virginia. He supposedly ran a 40 somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.5. You know, the one watch had him at 4.49, but that's one watch. Realistically, he's probably 4.5 to late 4.5 type guy. Supposedly runs routes real good for his size. Projects as an H-back tight end. At the next level. So he's definitely one, you know, judging by the film and all the highlights, of course, that's all they show you is the highlights. Pretty intriguing prospect to kind of mark down. Definitely a guy that'll battle probably Jamie McCoy and probably push David Johnson in training camp moving forward here if he makes it that far. Wes Lyons, this guy, another people get on me. This guy is nothing but a camp body, in my opinion. He's a nice size camp body at 6'9", but I really can't see him being anything more than that. But that's just a couple of WVU names that signed yesterday. I expect the Steelers will officially announce that over the next day or two.
Yep. And anything else before we wrap things up here?
Yeah, we actually have a question or two here, and if you can hear my dog in the background, once again, I apologize. Let's see here. We had Mark Richards wrote in and says, Dave and Dave, I'm a huge Steelers fan out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. What country is that, David?
Yeah, that's I think that's part of Canada.
Okay. Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He's addicted to the podcast, loves all the info and the podcast, hasn't missed a show for the last 2 years, and we definitely thank him for that. He says he's talked himself off the ledge as far as Mike Wallace goes. He's wondering if he is signed by another team and the Steelers don't match. He knows that they get first-round compensation there because of the tender, but he asked, will they also be in line for a compensatory pick, after that? And the short answer to that, basically he says that would make a difference too if, for instance, it was a third or fourth round compensatory pick in addition to the first round pick they would receive. And he's just wondering there. The answer to that is no, and that's a good question, but compensatory picks are doled out for the unrestricted free agents that are lost via free agency, and there's some sort of magical formula that based on playing time, salary, and all like that, of how the compensatory picks are doled out the following year, and we should be getting word at the end of any time now over the next 5 or 6 days, I think, of what the Steelers' compensatory picks for the losses that they had last year being Matt Spaeth. And also Nick Eason, and although probably it's a stretch, the other guy that they lost in free agency as well, to Ke'Aaron Fox, I think that's a stretch. But compensatory picks do not tag onto these restricted free agents and their tenders there. One other quick question he has, if Dante Hightower, Dontari Poe, Brockers, Luke Kuechly, DeCastro, Cordy Glenn, plus the other top offensive tackles are gone when the Steelers are on the board at 24. Do you see the Steelers trading down to get the Washington defensive or nose tackle, Alameda Tamu, Zeitler, Washington, the guard from Miami, Osamele, or another offensive guard? So basically what he's asking, David, is if all those top guys are off the board at 24, do you still stay best player available there, or do you try to get out of that spot and go down?
I don't see them. I think there'll be enough guys on the Steelers board, and they have needs. Certainly we've talked about inside linebacker or whatever. Now, if a list of six guys is off the board at 24, would they try to back down? Sure, of course, that can happen at any point in time. I would say, odds are equally likely they try to move up if there is a guy in the mold of Troy Polamalu that they feel like is going to fill a need and is only going to be there at 16 or 17. But I don't have a strong view. I would expect the Steelers to stay at 24 and take the guy they see there.
I do too as well, unless unless someone really wants to come up for that 24 spot and give me a very early second round spot. If I'm not trading out more than say, six or seven spots maybe, and if I felt that I could still get the guy that I have on my board right there at that time at that 24th pick, then I consider it. But, I mean, if you don't think that you can get that guy at 24 by moving down, you know, 7, 8, 9 spots into the top of round two, then I don't think you make that move. Of course, it depends on what they give you to go along with that on top of it. But really right now, this early far – this far out, I really think that astute standpoint. He also says he wonders what Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert think of guys like inside linebacker Mikael Kendricks, David Martin, the nose tackle. He says the NFL is changing. The 3-4 defense changing a little. He wants to know if they're changing a little to adjust. I think he's talking more about probably not so many much space eaters inside at 3-4, maybe going with these guys that are more in the range of 304 to 310, 315, little, you know, in that area. I don't know, and I think, you know, I'm kind of mixed on this. Chris Hoke was not an overly big space eater type guy, a guy that could play 3 technique, 5 technique on top of it. There's very few real big space eater type nose tackles in the NFL. I mean, are coming out in the draft this year that are top prospects to say. Now, of course, you got the kid in Alabama who's coming off the rebuilt knee, Chapman, who will be an interesting prospect in the middle rounds. So I'm not willing to say that they're willing to adjust. I think the draft will definitely tell us the type nose tackle that they take, and if they are adjusting to more mobile, less space-eating type nose tackle. But all around, good questions, Mark Richards from the country, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. and as always, we appreciate all questions that we get in here. Mark, we certainly do appreciate you being a longtime listener of the show.
Great stuff, Dave, as always. We'll wrap it up quick here. We're about 50 minutes in. So thanks to everybody, as always, for listening to the Terrible Podcast. You can follow Dave, SteelersDepot.com on Twitter. It's at SteelersDepot, and I'm at Hammer Speaks. We'll have plenty more as kind of the middle-level guys have been run on free agency. About 60 of PFT's top 100 guys are now signed. So we'll see how these kind of mid-range and back-end guys go. And this is where you might see the Steelers do something. This is where they've picked up guys like Mawelde Moore in the past. So we'll keep you posted on that. And as Dave talks about the draft, we will certainly start changing our focus toward the draft as we get closer here and get more of that going. So thanks, as always, for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.